My heart has no words. My eyes have no tears left. Mind had done gone crazy. Went off and married my fears. Now I'm standing here with nothing left to tell you. I'm standing here with nothing to prove. I got nothing to prove.
All right, welcome back to another edition of Mormon Expression Voices. Don't grimace at me like that, Zilpha.
Don't say welcome back to another edition because this one might be the first.
Well, if it's the first, then it's the first. It doesn't matter. It's
you don't say welcome back on the first one.
It's in a long tradition of fine Mormon Expression recordings.
Welcome to Mormon Voices.
All right, so...
I mean Mormon Expression Voices.
All right, tonight, obviously, I'm joined here by the lovely and talented Zilpha. Hi, Zilpha.
Hello.
And we're talking to Clarissa tonight.
Hello.
Did I say it right?
Yes.
Okay, good. And we're going to go through through her story. She's got a fascinating story to tell from right here in the heart of Zion in the Utah County. And down at the BYU. You know, when I went to BYU, it was still in a transition period between when they called it the BYU and BYU. You can gauge how old somebody is in the church because they will call it the BYU.
That's funny. My mother always calls it when I was at the BYU.
See?
Really? Yeah. I've never heard that.
It's a generational
Sorry,
thing.
Sorry, old folky. I've never heard that.
Okay, so Clarissa, you have an interesting story, like, say involving the why.
Yes,
is that better?
The why.
And so let's start back from where it all started. You grew up in an LDS family.
I did. I grew up on the East Coast, and in our town, which was predominantly Catholic and Jewish, we were the only LDS family. So I always held my faith as kind of a banner. It was what identified me as a child. And we didn't really do many of the typical things that I learned are part of the LDS tradition out here in Utah, like family home evening, nightly scripture study, family prayer. We rarely did any of these things. It was, you know, go to church on Sunday and take the sacrament and you pray in church and you come home and don't drink and don't wear tank tops and you're all good.
Did they try? You know, I think most families don't. There's just too much, right? It's just too much.
Did they try and stop or just never even?
No, my parents swore. We had lots of rated R movies in the house. And I just thought that was normal.
But what level of swearing? I mean, was it like hell and damns or did they go for the good stuff?
Oh, I think I heard my father say the F word once. And then he came to my room and told me he didn't take the sacrament that week.
Oh.
Other than that, everything else was game.
Wow.
Well, you know, you East Coast liberals.
Oh my goodness, yes, so liberal. No, my father's a Wall Street guy, so kind of the opposite. We're a Fox News family.
Oh yeah? But just a little bit more casual in the observance of
it wasn't just our family. Even in our ward, most people were, you know, that was just kind of what we did on the East Coast.
That was the Mormon flavor there.
Absolutely. I got criticized a bit in high school because I didn't go to... What do they call the thing that girls go to on Wednesday?
Yeah,
Young women.
Young women. The Wednesday activity. I never went to that because I was in I was on a varsity team and a competition orchestra, and I had, you know, as your typical East Coast, had all of the starry after school activities. So I never had time for mutual, and I remember getting criticized for that as a child. But other than not going to mutual. And not having sex. That was the other thing we weren't allowed to do. Or French kiss, which I broke that rule.
No tongues. Huh?
Some
people weren't allowed and some of us just didn't get to.
That was never a rule. My mom's rule was...
Wait, sex was no rule?
No. The tongue thing. My mom's rule was always keep your pants on.
That's a good rule.
Did you... I hadn't thought of this for years, but I never went to Mutual after I was 15.
I did.
every once in a while, my dad, who's the bishop, would make me go. But I was in the same boat. You know, I was a believer. I just, it was a bunch of little kids, you know, it was 12-year-olds. And like the kids my age, they'd all like were inactive or, you know, so I was kind of alone. And I had other things going on. I had, you know, I was in the band or in the debate team or whatever. And yeah.
It was always a top priority for my parents to get their kids to those kinds of activities.
So. The church activities?
Yeah.
So was BYU always an inevitability? Like all the
BYU? No, actually it was a last choice, a last minute decision. I was planning on going to Yale for a while, Yale or Caltech.
Wow.
And
what about BYU East, the Virginia whatever it is school?
Is that school even accredited?
I don't know,
I don't think it was at that time. It probably is by now, but
could be.
Well, in my senior year, I was a very, very nerdy child growing up. I didn't have many friends, and like I said, I used my religion as kind of a banner, which I think helped didn't help me gain friends as a child. So I was always known as that strange girl that wasn't allowed to drink milk and was supposed to come to school in a horse and buggy. They always got me confused with
milk.
Yeah, no, I had someone ask me, they saw me drinking milk, like, you're not supposed to be drinking that.
What?
So my senior year, I figured out how to be social, and that involved cutting class. I kissed a boy. I went to a party and drank a beer, came home and cried for 2 days because I felt so guilty. And my parents thought that I was just going off the deep end because I was no longer their straight A, perfect straight laced, you know, child, you know, one beer and I was going to the depths of sin. So my father came into my room. He was livid with me and he came into my room and he said, "That's it. We're so sick and tired of you. You're either joining the Navy or going to BYU because one of those two places will straighten you out."
Oh, the Navy.
Wow.
Yes. So
that, I think your dad was a little confused on the Navy.
Yeah. A woman on a boat with a bunch of sailors. I don't know if that would help you out.
I have no idea what he was thinking. His whole point was he wasn't going to pay for school because I was being a bad person. So BYU it was. And I flew out to Utah, never having been out here before, and just figured people out here would be, you know, kind of chill. Keep to them, you know, just mind their own manners and... You see someone doing something, it's, you know, live and let live and that sort of thing. And yeah, then my first week at BYU happened and I learned that is not the case at all at BYU.
What happened?
Well, and we should point out, you know, that a lot of people from outside Utah, their experience with Utah is like on BYU campus. And like, there's these circles of craziness. Right, you know, so yes. Like, you know, Utah is the crazy state, and then Utah County is a little bit more nuts, and then Provo and Orem are a little bit more nuts, and the BYU campus is a little bit more nuts, and on-campus housing is a little bit more nuts. Then you have like Heritage Halls, and then you have like Fox Hall, and there's I think a girl named Amanda in Fox Hall, which is the center of the nuts,
the nuttiness.
Anyway, you were going to say something.
The first week.
Oh, just in the first week, I remember sitting in church and listening to a chastity lesson that I had never heard before. The chastity lessons I had always, that I had always been taught was sex is a wonderful thing, and it's a good thing, and it's appropriate after marriage, and we encourage you to be abstinent until marriage. That's a good message. I get to BYU, and the lesson is, sex is horrible, and don't you dare ever allow those feelings to be aroused in your body. So, and not that I was, you know, going to BYU in the anticipation of having lots of sex, but I was just shocked with the very different attitude toward these things that I had been taught as a child.
So were you living on campus at
I was. That time? I was in Helaman Halls.
Which hall?
Hinckley.
Oh, I was in Chipman, but now it's a girls' hall.
It is a girls' hall.
Yeah, it was in the honors hall when I was there. Cha-ching, by the way. Yeah.
So your parents were Hinckley, paying for
it. Hinckley was a boys' hall, too. Are there still urinals in there? Or did they revamp them?
Oh, my goodness. I don't remember there being any urinals.
That's something you probably remember. Okay, go on.
So your parents were paying for all of your schooling.
I was on
this
scholarship.
Oh, okay.
At BYU.
So you didn't have to worry about it.
No. they did give me, I think, $100 a month for, you know, fun things. I didn't have a job, and they were nice enough to, you know, like, well, you're on full scholarship, and we want you to stay, so we'll give you some support so you don't have to work. So that was nice.
That was nice.
Yeah.
I wish I would have had that.
But didn't you get a sugar daddy pretty quick?
Yeah.
All right. So you start out at BYU, and what do you decide to study?
I started out as a math and physics major, and I spent my first year doing that. And I found it interesting. I've always loved math and science, but this is going to sound horrible and entirely shallow. I remember looking around class one day and thinking, I have more social skills than everybody else in this room combined, and I didn't want to be in a major like arts. So I switched to a different hard science major, which didn't turn out to be that much less socially nerdy. Able. But
you were the rose among the thorns, weren't you? I mean, you had your pick of the litter.
Well, they say the odds are good, but the goods are odd.
You know, when I was at BYU, they used to have these dances between the elementary education.
Oh,
and
don't
the
even get gosh. Me started.
Do they still do that?
There was a dance once between my school and the nursing school. And I had the people who organized the dance came up to me and told me explicitly that I was not invited to the dance.
Oh,
because
okay.
I was a woman.
Didn't you say, well, I could just put on my nursing
card? Like, I was going to be competition for the nurses?
You were
going to
throw the ratios
that
off.
That is bizarre.
It was very strange.
And rude.
Extremely rude.
So you got all the way through the rest of your undergrad pretty without much ado?
As far as belief in the church, no.
Well, and I mean, let's not keep in suspense. How did you possibly get out of BYU with an undergraduate degree without getting married?
I was proposed to a couple times.
Well,
wow.
These were guys who, both of them, I think, I didn't realize I was dating at the time when they proposed.
One of them
actually handed. One of them was doing the shotgun. Effect.
Right.
And
right.
He handed me a ring and actually said, the last three girls I tried to give this to rejected me. And
oh,
I know you're going to be different.
Heck.
I know.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. So that was just my freshman year. And my story with guys at BYU is kind of sad. And I have to say, I'm pretty disappointed with the general male population there. I view myself as reasonably attractive and socially able and not horribly obnoxious, so I feel like I have all the necessary traits to be in some sort of relationship. And I never got asked out. And I would ask these, I had bishops that would assign men in the ward to take me on dates, and the guys would tell me, oh yeah, well, the bishop told me I need to take you out. That's happened two or three times. And the guys would tell me more. I've heard this probably about twice a year from guys that they don't want to date someone who's career oriented, because women are supposed to be wives and mothers and be in the home, because that's what the prophets
say. They want someone studying elementary education or nursing.
Yes.
And let's be clear for people listening at home, you are very attractive and fit.
Oh, I mean, thank you.
Oh, yes.
So it's not like, you know, you were top shelf BYU co-ed. So it's another issue.
Maybe I should add in here that I am a brunette and have never dyed my hair blonde. That could be an issue too.
And you don't wear high heels.
And I do not wear high heels.
So, but that's a complaint that's heard quite often. I mean, I've heard that from a lot of girls who went to BYU about that they didn't get the play that they thought they should. And
well,
I don't
you
play
get
in
the
a good sense. I mean, just getting dates.
You get the weirdos who listened to their mission president when it was time to go home, and their idea is go home, get married. And so that's what they're trying, but they don't know how, because, you know, they're a little odd. So they try the ring with numerous women, and that doesn't seem to work. They try the I had a vision and you know, my bride to be.
Well, the church keeps a lot of, not to go off on a rant, but the church keeps a lot of people socially retarded.
Yeah.
Right. You know, it encourages kids not to date, encourages them not to be alone.
Well, it encourages them, you're not supposed to hang out with people. I've heard that so many times.
Definitely.
Do not hang out.
That's something they've started saying. Hinckley starts saying that a lot. Don't hang out. So you don't, the problem with that is you don't learn just normal sort of flirty or just talking to people.
You learn how to deal with members of the same gender, and which for girls is supposed to be very prissy, you know, good, let's go bake cookies. And then you learn how to act on a date, and that's it.
But even then,
on a date, there's a lot of pressure. It's not just a date. It's an interview for marriage.
But we were told, when I was a kid, we were told not to go out on single dates before our mission. I mean, that was
total awesome. You jump from not dating at all, except for like in big groups, to get married.
Yes.
And you don't know how to make that transition.
Yeah, well, I'm telling Zilpha just the other day. I was just at the dentist, and we're up in Lehigh. We're about 20 miles north of Provo. And the hygienist was talking to the dentist over the top of me. And she's a young woman, probably 21, 22. And she's moving back down. And her and the dentist were talking. She's not dating anybody.
Moving back down to the BYU area.
To go live in student housing or something. And with the sole purpose of getting married. It wasn't about dating. It wasn't about
meeting everywhere else like-minded people.
If you were in a normal world, you'd talk about, I want to meet people. I want to go out with people. I want to get new friends. If you substitute the word in husband and marriage everywhere, that's the conversation they were having. It was the bizarrest thing to me because I hadn't heard that stuff in 20 years. But yeah, so it's alive and well, you know.
And that's really all I was looking for, because my goal had always been to go to graduate school, get a PhD, and form a career from there. And I never was able to get to the point to say, I actually really want to have children and I want to have a family too, because the guys would look at what I was studying and say, well, not an L.Ed. major, not a nursing major. Let's just write her off. So it was unfortunate. And I never got to be friends with guys either for exactly the same reason.
Well, they're not looking for friends. They're looking for a mate.
Exactly. Exactly. And there's one guy I dated for about a month. He was off of his mission for, I think, about 4 months before we started dating. So, you know, it was in the range where he should have been, you know, cured from the mission awkwardness.
But 4 months isn't very long.
Yeah, I guess not. But some of them rebound pretty quickly. So we had been dating for a month, and he turns to me and he asks me how quickly I could plan our wedding. And I say, excuse me? And he goes, well, it's all missionaries' dreams to get married on their mission temple recommend. And mine expires in August.
Gosh.
And it was April at the time. And I turn to him, I say, you know, I think things are going well, but I just don't think we're ready to have that conversation right now. And he broke up with me later that day.
Wow.
And just so you know, he actually did end up getting married in August.
Holy
good for him.
Yes.
People have goals. Well, you know, there's another issue there. When I was, maybe things have changed. It was extremely difficult to just even be alone with a member of the opposite sex at BYU.
Well, they keep it so that there's not many places for you to go alone with somebody of the opposite sex.
You can in our coffee shops, right? That's not allowed. But restaurants are expensive.
Evil.
And, you know, it's like, what do you
do? No, we can't be alone in our houses even.
Right.
Because we can't be in the bedrooms together, because I don't know if you realize this, but if you are alone with a member of the opposite sex in a bedroom, you will have sex immediately. So we have to make sure that that doesn't happen. And if you're in the living room, you know, you always have roommates.
Uh-huh. So yeah, they keep it so that you can't really have, I guess, a car. Squaw Peak.
But in case any BYU students are,
I mean,
are listening, down.
And I'm not talking about sex. I'm talking about intimate conversations.
I know, but I'm giving tips. Down in the music, what's the music building right there by the admin building?
Oh, you
building?
Took me down there,
the
you
HVAC?
Little slut.
No, not the HVAC. The music. The where all the.
I thought it was the HVAC.
No, well, maybe. Anyway, there's a lot of piano practice rooms.
Yeah, that's
down
the
there.
HVAC in the basement.
Yeah, that's a great place to go make out.
Yeah, it's true.
Oh, I have lots of good places to make out. Planetarium is a great place, too. Just make sure you sit in the back row.
The planetarium. Also, up by the basketball stadium and stuff, there's all these houses that are administrative offices that the BYU has bought. They all have backyards. So,
and nobody's there at night.
And nobody's there at night.
That I did not know. I'll have to add that to my little black book of makeout spots.
I'm sure we'll get lots of email for more makeout spots, and maybe we'll have a new page on the website.
start a website.
Makeout spots at BYU.
But then the BYU Stasi will read it, so maybe we'll have.
So we need to encrypt it.
Yeah. Okay. So where were
Let's
we?
Let's see. What were we talking about? Undergraduate, no marriage.
So
any other?
So
did
you start struggling with your faith as an undergraduate, or
there were a few things that have always bothered me as a member of the church. First, I've always been bothered by why women couldn't have the priesthood, and I always asked, and I've heard every explanation, and none of them I found very satisfactory. They all seemed kind of hand-waving and purposefully missing the point. Polygamy always bothered me, but I adopted more of the apologist attitude of, well, maybe they just didn't know what they were doing, you know, God needed to raise up a righteous seed. There's actually, I nearly got kicked out of a D&C class. This may have been one of the turning points. This was from a D&C professor at BYU, and he was talking about Joseph Smith, and he started getting into the polyandry, and he said, he mentioned kind of offhand, I guess hoping no one would pick up on it, that Joseph Smith was married to women who were married to other men. And I raised my hand and I said, were any of these marriages consummated? And he, to his credit, was honest and said, there's strong evidence to suggest that they were. And I raised my hand and I said, isn't that adultery? And that is not adultery, because he was the prophet and he was perfect and blah, blah, blah. And yeah, he was mad at me, and I did not do well in that D&C class at all. But that's...
He brought it up.
That was the thing. I was in trouble because I found fault in that. I wanted to know more, and he wouldn't go into it, because, you know, that's not necessary for salvation. But I remember hearing that and thinking maybe I should start learning more about where this religion comes from. And the biggest thing that had always bothered me is I'd never felt like I'd had a spiritual experience. And I would sit in church and testimony meeting, and I'd listen to these people cry, and I'd hear this phrase all the time. It was like being hit over the head with a spiritual baseball bat, where I heard this voice so distinctly, and I knew with every fiber of my being. And my entire life, I could not say that I'd ever felt anything like that. And being a very pragmatic person, I wanted to make sure that when I felt something like that, it was coming from an external source, not from an internal source. So I talked with quite a few bishops, stake presidents, listened to talks, read all the enzymes. I did my research here. And I decided, you know, I need to have a spiritual experience. I need to have this confirmation that the gospel is true. So I read my scriptures every day, prayed on my knees every day, and the difference in my prayers during this time from before was that I started off saying, I need the spirit of discernment, because I need to know this is coming from you, not coming from me. And it didn't come. So I thought, well, I'm obviously not doing something right. So I talked to my bishops more. I started going to the temple every week. I decided that I wasn't following the word of wisdom right. I was eating too much meat.
You've been in doubt?
Eating too much meat?
Baptisms only.
Oh, okay.
Yes. I thought maybe I'm eating too much meat.
It's
I need
clouding
to eat more vegetables.
The spiritual energy.
I thought it could be possible. I mean, I was coming from a very, you know, I look at my belief now as more of a, almost like a mysticism, as I thought, well, maybe there's some voodoo in the meat that's messing up with my, you know, spiritual radar. And it still never happened. I actually got very, very depressed from it. It got to the point where I thought I needed to drop out of school, because there was nothing more important than serving the Lord and having this spiritual experience. And, you know, I mentioned to my parents, I was like, you know, maybe I should just drop out and become like a full-time missionary. And thankfully, my parents talked me out of it. But I was very depressed, and I went to a bishop, which is, for anyone listening, even if you're a true believing Mormon, do not go to a bishop if you're depressed. Go to a psychiatrist, please. And he told me that I was sinning by being upset, because the Lord wants us to be happy. And of course, you know, how does that help someone who's already upset? So I remember I kept praying, and it wasn't long after that and these prayers were so heartfelt. I was in tears almost every night on my knees, and it never came. And I just be on my knees begging, like, Heavenly Father, please, to the slightest bit of comfort, the slightest bit of acknowledgement that you're there. And it never came. And then it dawned on me one day, it's like, you know, if I were a parent and I had a child, I would never treat my child like that. A child's coming up to me, begging me for some love or some reassurance that I exist and I'm there. You would never do that to a child. You would hug that child and kiss them and tell them how much you love them until they stop crying.
If you could.
Oh, please don't start. Yes, I've heard, because I tried explaining that to a bishop. He's like, well, you don't understand God's ways. Like, he can't reach out to you physically, but he's trying so hard. And I'm like, but no, like,
isn't this he is, God? Can't he do anything?
This is the promise. I read the Book of Mormon front cover to back cover. I went to a grove of trees. I'm like, if I'm going to do this shit, I'm going to do it right. Sorry, I probably shouldn't have said shit there.
You can say shit. Go ahead.
Reenact the Joseph Smith experience.
Well, you know, it worked for him. So it should work for me. And nothing happened. And
maybe
my bishop...
Maybe because you're a woman?
Oh, no, that never even crossed my mind. No,
maybe because there's nothing. Well, what are you talking about?
Woman mind can't understand the complexities of the gospel.
I was just making a joke because it happened for Joseph Smith because he's a man.
Oh, and he has the priesthood?
Well, he didn't then, but he could.
That's true.
He could, potentially.
Yes. It was a very disheartening experience because I was following this very formulaic plan and hearing all of these promises, and none of them were being fulfilled. And there is a logical problem with the gospel, and that is you can be stuck in this infinite loop of doubt because they tell you, you know, you have to wait on the Lord's time. And no matter what I say and what I do, I can always be criticized by someone telling me, well, you didn't wait long enough. If you just waited longer, then it would have come. And I made a very hard decision that I was tired of waiting and I wanted to move on with my life and be happy and find something else outside of, you know, the church. I was tired of trying to build this relationship with God. I wanted to focus on building a relationship with people around me.
Yeah, I've had people ask me, are you sure you didn't get an answer?
Well, oh, you're just ignoring it.
As if, like, the non-answer is a possible answer. So how can you be sure that your non-answer was just them not answering?
Oh, I was told that. When I complained about how Moroni, it's Moroni, right? Yes. I haven't read the scriptures in a while. Moroni's promise that you will know that the Book of Mormon is true when you pray about it. Every time I've complained, you know, why didn't that come true? It's right there in canonized scripture. So, well, maybe it was because you already knew it was true.
Yeah, that's
you didn't need the spiritual
the ugly
confirmation.
Stepsister of that argument.
Yeah, then why would I be asking?
And you hear that a lot. I've even said it myself in church. You know, oh, my answer was that I already knew the answer. Blah blah blah. I don't need to have some kind of
thing that I got when I asked if I should marry you. But the reason why is because I already did know. I mean, it wasn't anything that any external source had to tell me.
Yeah, I mean, they're... Yeah.
But it's the opposite of that.
Okay.
Sorry. But that was my answer.
Okay.
All right. So you broke out of your depression.
Yes. And that's when I decided that...
So did you put God on a shelf?
Oh, I did the shelf thing for sure. But like I said, I'm a very pragmatic person and I'm a scientist, and putting things and ignoring evidence and ignoring problems just doesn't work for a pragmatic mind. And I eventually wanted these things to be answered. But even with the shelf thing, you can't put, you know, not having a spiritual experience on a shelf. It's one of the main tenets of the Gospels that God is there and he loves you. And when that doesn't happen, it's, you know, kind of catastrophic to your testimony. So I broke out of the depression when I decided that I was, at that point, it wasn't that I didn't believe in God. it was just that I didn't think that God was as he's described by most of my Sunday school lessons or the scriptures. I thought, you know, I'll worry about religion at some point later in life and just focus on, you know, me and people around me and just being a good person. And so I kind of bought into the whole New Order Mormon type of thing. And as I was, you know, reading through some of those blogs and going to church and trying to find, you know, the good things in church so I could still latch on to Mormonism, it started dawning on me that there really isn't anything good in Mormonism that you can't find anywhere else. And people are just as big bastards in the church as they are outside. So there wasn't, I mean, there were good, there's good and bad in the church, and there's good and bad outside the church. And so realizing that Mormons just don't have the market cornered on holiness.
No, I agree. That's why I chuckled. I seem to be getting in this debate a lot with people lately, and I don't, you know, they say, I stay in the church because it's a good place to raise kids. And I'm like, well, yeah, just... But that sort of stuff is everywhere, you know? You could find the same stuff at Barnes & Noble, for heaven's sakes.
Oh, absolutely. You know? Well, when I decided to leave, which unfortunately has been a slow process because as a BYU student, I can't officially distance myself from the church or else I risk getting thrown out.
And I don't know if we stayed at the top, but you're still a BYU student.
Yes, I am still a BYU student. However, it should also be known, just in case anyone's mad, my tuition is paid entirely in government grants, not by tithing money, so no one has to be upset.
Trust me, I've paid enough tithing to cover cover your portion. You're good. We're all clear.
Well, that plus, don't you think people should be more livid at the mall they're building than some non-believer trying to get a degree at a university? But I guess that's another topic. Where was I going with that? Sorry.
So you were an undergraduate when you had this faith crisis, this one where you were depressed and then you broke out of it, or was that as a graduate student?
That was as an undergrad, and when I kind of broke out of that was right about the time when I was deciding where to go to graduate school, and one of the worst decisions of my life, I decided that, you know, maybe if I go to BYU, it'll fix all of my testimony issues. I just need more time here. So I went to BYU for graduate school.
Everyone should see the look on her face. Such remorse.
The education has been phenomenal. The professors have been great. But I hate the idea that I can't tell my story to anyone because as a non-believer, I'm violating one of the tenets of the honor code. And it's unfortunate because it wasn't my choice to not believe. I tried. I really tried to believe.
What's funny is that if you had been raised in a different religion and decided to go to BYU, that would be okay. But because you were raised a Mormon and now you don't believe in Mormonism, as a one-time believer, you would be in big trouble.
That's absolutely right.
Which doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense. I even contacted the Honor Code office and asked them, hypothetically, if someone were to leave the LDS Church, could they officially change their religious status?
Yeah.
Well, there was a test case. She was, this is years ago now, must be 20, 25 years ago, and I apologize, I don't remember her name. She was a Benson scholar at the time, and a Monson scholar now, I guess. And they only give out like 6 or 10 of those a year. And she went her freshman year and then lost her faith and officially resigned. And she actually sued the school. And they were allowed full legal religious discrimination, you know.
Absolutely.
Because her argument was, if I remember the details of the case correctly, she went and got an ecclesiastical endorsement. She was no longer an LDS person. She went and got an ecclesiastical endorsement from, you know, a Methodist minister or whatever, which was fine. It was within the auspice of the rules. But no, they were held up that they could throw her out of the university and lose her scholarship.
It's absolutely true. I know a couple friends to whom that's happened. And like I said, it's what's unfortunate is that all the rules in the honor code, I can choose to follow those. Whether or not I drink, I can choose not to drink. Whether or not I have sex, I can choose that. Whether or not I swear, I can choose that. But it seems that completely against my will, because I wanted to believe, I wanted to be part of this. I mean, my family was on the line here. Completely against my will, I just discovered I got the wrong answer, basically. I did everything right and got the wrong answer. And because of that, I could be considered not in good ecclesiastical standing.
Let's be clear in case people are questioning the morality of finishing out school there. I mean, it's a double bind, and you're in, and you go in under good pretense, mm-hmm. and you're attempting to follow these rules, but the rules are structured in such a way, and the honor code actually is fairly onerous. For example, if you are off campus in the summer and you're a man and you don't shave, or you're a woman and you wear like
a bikini
or whatever,
shorts, mid-thigh shorts,
you have violated the honor code and you're completely subject to termination of... So the honor code is full of a lot of little nitpicky rules. There's curfews in there about 10 p.m. and being with the opposite sex and being in the room. And everybody, or I would say 98% of all the students, have violated the honor code.
Oh, absolutely. I'd say 100%. There's no one who can possibly follow all of those rules.
So it's one of those things, institutional things, where they, you know, it's like a police officer will say, you know, we can get you for something, you know, if we pull you over.
Absolutely.
And it's the same sort of thing.
Absolutely. And... So I've studied the honor code many, many times. I have it nearly memorized by this point in time. Oh, you have to wear shoes on campus. That's another rule in the honor code.
Oh my gosh.
You can't go barefoot on campus.
Holy cow.
But what I've decided from there, because I felt pretty guilty going to BYU, even though I knew I didn't believe. But what I decided was, you know, who am I feeling guilty toward? God? He kind of missed his part of the bargain, so I don't really feel that obligated to follow through on mine. And what is more moral, leaving and losing all of my graduate credit? Because as a graduate student, I cannot transfer my credit.
Right.
So I would lose 2 years of research and all my graduate credit. Potentially, well, it would change all of my life plans because I have a PhD program that I'm going to. For what? Because I feel guilty because of some rule that I couldn't help but break? That's some system that's designed to make you fail unless you become, you know, one of those single-minded people. So, yeah, I after much debate with myself, I decided that it wasn't the most immoral thing I could do.
Right. So let's, we're getting to the heart of the story here.
Okay.
So at some point along this journey in your education, you know, you kind of decide, well, I don't really believe anymore. I'm going through the motions. You decided to out yourself.
I did. It was a horrible, horrible decision. And like I said, growing up on the East Coast, my parents weren't the most observant people. I never heard that. We did pray over meals. I should say that. We always prayed over meals. Never prayed outside of that. I never saw them read their scriptures unless they were preparing a lesson for church. We never really talked about the church, and we didn't drink coffee or alcohol. And I knew my parents wore their garments most of the time. My mother wouldn't wear hers in summer because it was very hot and humid where I'm from. But I didn't think they would take it so hard. And all I said to them was... I related my story about how I had prayed and hadn't received an answer, and I'd done some research on Joseph Smith. I said, yeah, I just can't believe that this guy was telling the truth here. And when I leave BYU, I think I'm going to take a break from the church. I tried to break it to them as easily as possible. And then the tears started coming. My mother was crying. My father was livid. He would not talk to me the rest of the time that I was home.
Do you think they had a clue before this? That
I don't see how they couldn't have had a clue. For years, I refused to go to church with them when I was home. Yeah, I'd make up every excuse. Oh, I'm tired. I'm sick. Oh, I forgot to bring a dress home with me. And I thought it was pretty obvious that I was trying to take a break from going to church.
Well, I think this is key because I've seen this a lot in the culture. you know, Jack Mormons are more tolerated than people who say, I don't believe, which is sort of strange, you know, given there's scriptural precedence for saying, you know, choose which side you're going to be on. And a lot of the people who say, matter of fact, virtually everybody I've met who professes to be an atheist or an agnostic can give you a well-reasoned, heartfelt answer as to why they're there. You know, it's not like, you know, I just want to smoke more weed.
Yeah,
it's
felt like hanging out or
but
didn't want to do it anymore.
I guess the irony I'm trying to underline is that for a lot of the members of the church, if you still say, yeah, sometime I'm going to get back to church, but, you know, I'm just having too much fun right now, that's tolerated more so than being like, you know, strict in your morality and saying, I just don't believe the church.
Well, what's funny is I have a younger sister who goes to school in Salt Lake. And before I had outed myself to my parents, she had come home in tears, or she had called home in tears saying, I got so drunk at a party and I woke up naked next to a guy and I have no idea what happened.
Oh.
And my parents were obviously scared. I mean, no one wants to hear that from their daughter, but that was forgiven. That was completely forgiven. A couple weeks later, my parents were calling me up. Your sister's such an amazing person. She went through some trials and then she went back to church and now she has all of these Mormon friends. It's wonderful. I'm like, well, I haven't done any of that. I just don't believe in it anymore. So it's going to be so much easier when I tell them, right? Wrong. So I was home for 3 days. I was on vacation. I told them 3 days before I left home. And it was brutal. My mother, every time she'd be around me, she'd start asking me these snappy questions. How can you not believe that the Book of Abraham is true? And I would say, well, I've done some research and these are the reasons that I have. And I tell her the reasons. And then, that is so offensive. You've been reading anti-Mormon literature. You are being so rude. Stop attacking my religion. And like, but you asked. I'm giving you an answer. And I learned quite quickly that the best way to deal with that situation was just to be like, you know what, Mom? I don't think that we're going to get anywhere with this conversation. Let's talk about something else. And then I came back out here to school. And a week later, I got an email from my father. Very, very nasty email from my father, which said, started out pretty sarcastic. He's like, oh, I totally understand what you mean, that Joseph Smith is a complete liar and therefore I have no reason to be a moral person and I should just go out and sleep with every woman I see and spend all the money I have. You've taught me a very good life lesson.
Because
again, you may not realize this, but if you don't believe in Joseph Smith, you have no morals whatsoever. And then
apparently that's what he secretly wants to do or something. Like if he didn't believe, that's where he would go.
I hope not. I don't want to think about my father sleeping around. That's gross. So and then the email ended with, we fear that you are going to corrupt your brother and sister. We ask that you no longer have contact with them. We don't want to see you back home because our family, we have very strong beliefs and we don't want you to corrupt our family or come home with some vendetta against the church. If you need any financial advice, you're welcome to contact us, but short of that, have a nice life. And that was the email.
So now you received this mid-semester or when?
I received this, it was the beginning of June.
Okay, so...
Sorry, I don't take classes anymore, so I don't know the semesters very well.
But and you're close to finishing up. So you're in the middle of your program. You know, you've been on scholarship, but you have had assistance, like you said, from your parents.
Very minimal assistance. I have always been a very independent person, and I got a job my sophomore year. And when I needed help, financial aid, I would contact them. But I've been on full scholarship my entire time, and I've had a job for the past, you know, 6 years, so they haven't spent much.
So it was beginning of June when you got this email, did you say?
Yes.
They divorced you in an email, huh?
Yes.
And so how long had it been that you'd sort of laid down and said, no, I really don't believe before you got the email?
It was just like a week.
Yeah, 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
About 2 weeks.
And so
what did you respond? Or did you respond?
I did.
So not a, I mean, I don't mean to belabor the point, not a phone call, Not anything, an email.
An email. And what was sad was that the week before I received that email, I got a text from my father telling me that he was sitting in church and thinking about how blessed he felt to have me as a daughter. And then I heard from a family friend that he had gone in and talked to his bishop about me and non-believing. And though I don't know for sure, but it seems to me that this was coming from that interview with his bishop, because prior to that, he was trying to be a loving father and, you know, like, I feel so blessed to have you. And I respond to that text, like, I feel very grateful to have you as a father as well. And then I got that email, which seemed completely out of left field. And I wrote back saying, you know, I can't believe that this is coming from the same man who only told me a week ago how blessed he felt to have me as a daughter. I don't know what's changed between now and then. And I defended myself, but fairly mildly, because this is my family. As much as I want to stand by what I believe, I do not want to lose my family. And in the end of the email, I'd asked for quite a bit of advice on how to respond to this email. And at the end of the email, I said, perhaps you're right. I should go back to church and give it another try. So maybe not the most honest thing, but like I said, I was facing losing my family. And
you're out here 2,000 miles away by yourself.
By myself. So
your siblings that your father asked you not to contact, are they still living at home or are they adults?
Well, my younger sister is out here, the one who
got
drunk and was very easily forgiven, was out here in Salt Lake. And then my younger brother is still back home. And they actually let him come out to visit me the end of this summer. So things have been getting better since I've been talking to them. And
did you corrupt him?
Well, I was actually going to take him to sacrament meeting when he came out to visit me. That was my honest plan. And I forgot that week sacrament meeting had been changed to an earlier time and we slept in. And my mother gave me an earful. She's like, you're just trying to corrupt him. You know, I know you're just getting into this anti-Mormon literature. And,
you know,
how old is he?
16.
Oh.
There's a sadness, you know. When I first heard about your story and your plight back when it happened back in June, and there's a certain disgust, you know, that I felt and others have felt with what your parents would do, you know, that they would throw that wall, they would discard the relationship. I actually feel more skeeved out by the reaction after you told them that you'd go back to church. You know, here they were ready to, you know, take this drastic action based merely on thoughts, on your perception. It's, you know, it's not like you went out and like joined Al Qaeda or something.
Oh, well, maybe I should. I do have to admit something here.
Okay.
While I was home, I went over to my 87-year-old neighbor's house because she's an old lady and I wanted to visit with her. She enjoys that. And while I was there, I had a sip of wine. And my parents asked me, and I'm honest to my parents, because they said, well, we noticed there was a bottle of wine. Did you have any wine? I was like, well, I had a taste of wine. And they were very, like, you're going to turn into an alcoholic.
And you're an adult. I mean, you're in, finishing up graduate school.
I am 25 years old.
Right.
But that part was just like the... I guess the
straw that broke the camel's back. Yeah. It's possible.
Now this was the wine was before the email?
The wine was before the email, but also before the I feel so blessed to have you as a daughter.
Right.
And I talked to my parents very, very frankly about alcohol and my views on alcohol, and I told them, you know, with everything I do, partying has never been something that's crossed my mind. I don't see much allure to it, and I very seriously doubt I'm going to become an alcoholic from a sip of wine. And of course, it's my first sip of wine, so what's my reaction going to be? Oh, it's gross.
But still, I think my take is still lodged in my heart, which is you know, it's one thing to disown. It's another thing to go back on that so quickly, you know, just on this sort of half-assed pledge that you give to go to church, which has an obvious hole in it, you know, because you didn't really say, I'm going to go to, you know, I'll be paying my tithing and all that sort of stuff.
No, I wanted to keep it very vague right. So that I didn't have to lie to them. And I just said I would go to church and I feel, yeah, show up every now and then. And maybe that's just something I do for the rest of my life because... my family's Mormon, and it's something, it's part of my culture, part of my upbringing, and maybe I just show up every now and then. But I do not want to go through the temple. I don't plan on following the word of wisdom as it is interpreted today. I don't plan on teaching my children the Book of Mormon exclusively. So
the sheer number of people out there that we've met or talked to that in various degrees are in that status, who either go to church to preserve marriages or to preserve career, you know, if you're a dentist or you're a doctor, who go to church or pretend to go to church, or I know people who haven't been in church in 20 years who put a pair of garments back on when they go home to visit their 80-year-old mother. Mm-hmm. Because the social cost is so high, there are people listening who will say that your case is an aberration. But I'm here to say it's not. It happens all the time. And there's all sorts of people who have to just pretend. And the funny thing is the pretending is made of cellophane. Everybody can see through it. But what is it about the organization that makes people go through this charade?
And makes it somehow okay if you're still going once in a while or you're putting on the Vespers. Is that the right word? Vestiges. What is the word? Not vespers.
Vestiges.
Vestiges.
Putting on the vestiges of belief. That even if they know you don't believe, somehow that's okay. But if you throw, like they would say, throw the baby out with the bathwater and just move on from Mormonism, that's not okay at all.
Well, like your mother used to tell us, she probably still will again, that it's okay for us not to believe in the church anymore, but we went to the temple, damn it, and we have to keep our covenants. You know, like it doesn't matter that we don't believe, but
right.
You have to just
well,
keep
we should
going
still
through the motions.
Do it. And didn't your parents say, well, you know, at least just still go?
Oh, they probably said that at one time.
For no other reason for, you know, your children. Well, if we don't believe, why would we want our children to believe? That doesn't make any sense to us. Of course, it does to the believer who wants, you know, the next generation to have a chance at, you know, at the beliefs. But
so here, I mean, to reiterate, on an email, you know, you're away at school, you're finishing up, you're at an important stage in your life, you're at a transitional stage in your life, you need support, and it's just, you know, we don't want
have
contact
a nice
with you.
Life.
Have a nice life.
And one more thing that made this so hurtful is that while I was home on this vacation, a couple days before I had outed myself, I had been accepted to this amazing PhD program. Like my lifelong dream had just come true. I was so excited. And even though I'm on full scholarship for this PhD program, and they're also giving me a stipend on top of that, the problem is where I'm moving to is very expensive and it's out of the country, so I'm not eligible for student loans. And they knew that and they were very proud of me and were very excited to, I would need about $15,000 in addition to what I was getting from the school to support me through the 4 years of my PhD program, which isn't, you know, it's a substantial amount of money, but it's not something beyond what my parents could have supported me with. And considering I had rarely asked them for money as an undergrad and as a master's student, you know, they were fairly willing to support me. Part of that email was telling me that they would not support me, for this program. And as I said, I'm not eligible for student loans being an international student. So by saying they wouldn't support me, that was destroying my chances of going to this school.
Which they fully understood.
They completely understood.
So instead of saying, it's almost like the fact that you lost your belief clouded over the fact that you're a great student and you got into this great PhD program, something that they should be super,
no,
super proud of.
It didn't cloud it. In my opinion, they were using it against her.
Well, they were. Right.
I mean, it was, they were going for the soft spot, right?
And they certainly hit it. there were many, many tear-filled nights after that. Which was another reason why I was so quick to to play into the game and be like, well, I'll go back to church. This is something that, you know, I'm losing my family, I'm losing my career, my future. That's so much based off of something that, in my opinion, isn't even real. So I was pretty quick to at least say, you know,
well,
just
and
to
a status
them.
That you had come to peace with a long time ago. I mean, your own status of non-belief is something you had fought through and arrived at.
You know, it was something that I was, but by the time I told them, it was a happy thing because I wasn't struggling anymore trying to make these things that didn't make sense, trying to fit them together and, you know, beat myself up for why the spirit wasn't touching me. You know, what was I doing that was so wrong that God wouldn't talk to me? You know, finally I was at peace and apparently that wasn't good enough.
Well, my advice to people out there is the only thing that, that believers hate more than non-believers is gays. So first thing you do is tell them that you're gay, and then you can pull that back and say, I was just kidding.
Well, what's funny is my parents actually accused me of being gay during this whole thing.
Because you're not married?
Well, I mean, you can't graduate with an undergraduate degree from BYU as a woman, unmarried, not be accused of being gay.
Oh my goodness. My hair used to be short. I'm growing my hair out right now. And I hate to admit this, but part of the reason is because I was so tired of my mother asking me the not so subtle ways whether or not I was a lesbian. So that was the first thing. Oh, you must just be gay and confused. That's why you feel this way.
So
now that they've kind of accepted you back as their daughter, do you still have their support for the overseas program, or
they have not said yet whether or not they're giving me support there? We still kind of have this volatile relationship, and I feel like I've been walking on eggshells around them, trying to be extremely
because you need
respectful.
Them for this.
I feel like I sound like the worst person in the world right now.
I don't think you're using them. Like you said, you supported yourself through scholarships and jobs, through your whole career, and now you need them.
Well, the hard part, I mean, you obviously still have some difficult decisions in front of you, but they sort of have you over a barrel. And you know, once again, I would think that they would understand that, and them leaving you in this status in the middle, you know, is in my mind a power move.
That's exactly what I think it was. It's kind of like what the honor code does. Like, I have no choice but to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I was hoping to be free of the honor code when I leave. And fortunately, I decided to out myself to my parents. So I'll have to wait until I no longer need the support of my parents to be free from that as well.
But makes me want to cry.
Oh, I should add in here, my parents really are wonderful people. And I've been trying to think of why it is that they felt this way. And there's a few reasons that I've come up with. So first of all, I felt very betrayed by the church too, especially after the Prop 8 thing and its claiming we're all about the family. And to see how quickly they were ready to throw away their family based on, I'm still a good person. There's nothing wrong with me. And they're just so ready to throw me away. But the belief of eternal spiritual families is so ingrained so strongly into their minds. And I was, you know, from their perspective, I was going and ruining that belief for them. And, you know, I could see why they were scared. I still don't agree with their reaction, but I could understand them being scared. And like I said, I have a very strong inkling that the bishop probably told them to cast me out, because I've heard that from other people, that bishops have encouraged family members to ostracize people who don't believe, so that, you know, one rotten apple doesn't spoil the bunch. And what you're mentioning before about why someone who explicitly states that they're leaving gets treated worse than someone who's more of a Jack Mormon, I think it's more the prodigal son type of idea. The Jack Mormon is the prodigal son, and they may come back, but I'm an apostate.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no forgiveness for an apostate.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. And I think, I mean, I, I don't pretend my dislike for, you know, for religion in general. And I think whenever you find people who are otherwise good people in the world doing abhorrent things, be it from dropping bombs on villages to whatever, there's usually some sort of religious thing that's going on behind there. One of the problems with religion is it gives people justification for doing things that we would otherwise find morally repugnant. And that's, I think, one of the problems. Not saying that everybody in religion does that, but, you know, there's a reason that whenever we go to war as a country, we start preaching, you know, banging the God drum pretty hard. And that's I think, what's awful. It's right there in the first in the Book of Mormon, right? What's the first big lesson of the Book of Mormon? Well, Nephi chops off Laban's head. He murders the man, and the man is drunk, and the man poses no threat, and he's passed out, and it's to steal a book, you know. But the whole point of the book is religion and the angel and God override whatever moral sensibilities you have, and unfortunately that plays out in little ways in our lives. You know, people would say, oh, you're just talking hyperbole, but here it is right here. You have people who would otherwise be good, decent, moral people will do something that 99% of people in this country would be shocked and horrified at. But I'm still there. I'm sure they're still good, decent people. And here they are acting in a way that's just unconscionable, you know, in terms of saying to your daughter, just because of what you think, what you feel, it's not allowed, and we are going to punish you with silence.
No, I completely agree with that. And I thought for an instant that was going to be their reaction, I never would have told them. But considering how quick they were to forgive my sister, and that by Utah Provo Mormon standards, my parents would be considered Jack Mormons, I just figured that it wouldn't be that big a deal. I'd be like, oh, you know, I guess we kind of wished you'd get married in the temple, but okay, you're still a good person. We're proud of you.
Well, and it's to me, it's not even the money. The money is an unfortunate situation. Like I said, they have you over the barrel. You'll get through that.
But
saying you are not allowed to talk to your brothers and sisters, you are cut off. You are no longer one of us. Is just, it goes so much against our human nature, our genetic programming. It's. I don't know. It just leaves me out of work.
Yeah, but I think for whatever reason, they had second thoughts about that maneuver and realized that I hope that they realize that they don't want to lose you as a daughter, and they still want to have a relationship with you, even though it might be a little different. But I mean, it sounds like they're starting to come around, right?
Oh, that's absolutely right. It didn't, at the time, it was extremely, well, it's still pretty hurtful what they said and how they acted. And they did not contact me for 2 months. I would call, leave messages, send emails, no response for 2 months. And finally, they broke down and started talking to me again, and I just saw them. They got, they had to evacuate because of the hurricane last week. Oh, great. I just dated this one. No, sorry.
That's okay. I was going to say, you know, you're talking about June. It's September 1st.
Okay. So they came out to visit my sister and myself, and they brought my brother with them, and we had a lovely time. But every now and then they just slip in these subtle little hints about how they still expect me to go back to the true believing Mormon. I mentioned that there was a guy who I was interested in. Their first question is he a believer? And I was so bummed they asked me such a direct question, because he's not. And I'm like, well, it's a big mistake to marry outside the faith. You should marry for the sake of your children. You should marry And I can't argue with them, because if I argue, then I'm insulting their religion.
Right.
It's worse.
Right.
So I kind of have to
just kind of smile and, well, pretenses.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, it sounds like there's possibly a silver lining, and who knows, maybe in 6 months we'll have to bring you back to find out what's happened since. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I've heard the story again and again, so we hope that there is hope, where you hear about the person who outs themselves, you know, as a homosexual to their parents and receives sometimes a rather stringent response and gets thrown out and all that sort of stuff. But by and by, you know, that parent comes around and realizes that the child is not corrupt, the child is not dirty, and those parents join PFLAG and they're there and they're supporting the cause. And there's plenty of talk about, you know, them going from being, you know, this ardent Catholic to this ardent Catholic who is, you know, hugely in favor of gay rights. So that goes with the fact that they show the number one, what is it, feeding factor into whether or not somebody's tolerant of homosexuality is whether or not they know somebody intimately who's gay. If they do, they tend to be much more tolerant of it. And I think one of the things that, and this is why I try to encourage whenever possible, you know, people who are having trouble with the church to kind of own it and kind of wear it out and say that they're having struggles as much as they can. You know, we realize just like this whole conversation, it's not there. It's not always there. But if you do that, then people realize saying, oh, I know her and she's not a bad person. Apostates aren't all alcoholics and porn addicts and all that kind of stuff, that they can live decent lives and they can be good people even though they don't believe. So I would hope that they'll come around.
But I have a concern about what you're saying, in that if you came out to your parents as a homosexual, there's a lot of scientific data that would show them that what truly wasn't your choice.
There's more scientific data to show that non-belief is a
I don't think there's scientific data that shows that non-belief is a choice or not a choice.
Non-belief is the right choice, is what I'm saying. This, the science is all behind non-belief.
Oh, well, obviously. But I'm just saying that a parent would have a harder time ever accepting that wasn't your choice, that you didn't do something, you know, in your mind that made you choose that, as opposed to if you were homosexual, they would, you know, maybe they'd seen you growing up and you had some tendencies and they kind of could look back on that and say, yeah, I mean, I can see that probably they were always, you know, this way, and the science is telling me that this is, you know, something that they don't have a choice about. But for something like this, where you say, I don't believe, to them, that sounds like I choose not to believe in your religion.
Well, and there's the three reasons why people leave the church. They're offended by something, which I don't want to get into too much detail because I don't want to out myself at BYU. But there was something that happened, which I will admit I was quite offended by.
Well, I used to argue against that. But I'm more likely to say, yeah, so the church is pretty damn offensive.
Yes.
No? So I'm with you.
Okay.
People get offended out of the church.
So you're offended by something, or you've sinned, and you're too afraid
and you
want to
repent.
And everybody sins, and everybody wants to sin, or they should.
Or you want to sin.
Oh,
those
so
are the
one
three
is,
reasons.
You did sin,
you did
but you
sin.
Don't want to repent for it because you're too embarrassed or
yes,
something.
Or you want to sin. And then if I were a guy, there would be a fourth reason of I'm addicted to pornography. But women obviously can't be addicted to pornography.
No.
So, and my parents, of course, gave me that, like, well, we saw you drinking wine, so you left because you want to be drunk and be a lush, and that, I think in their mind, that's what they think. They actually contacted an older friend of mine who is not LDS, but just a friend who I confide in, and they thought it was from this friend that I was getting all of my anti-Mormon ideas, and my mother called her up and gave her a piece of her mind about how, you know, how dare you be telling my daughter that she can go drink? She's going to be an alcoholic. And yeah.
Well, there's one thing I need to say after I just went on that tirade about, you know, living out loud. I think this goes for, you know, outing yourself as a homosexual or as a non-believer. It's the same. Do so on your own timeline. I mean, there are no thought crimes, and that's yours. And if there's any lesson to be learned from this story for those listening to it, is there are consequences to this. In 2011, there are still consequences. You can still get burned at the stake. And people need to be careful and realize that they need to do it when the time is correct. Because, you know, you're walking a line even coming on this podcast. We talked a lot about that before we recorded. Your scholarship, your degree, your status, your family, everything we talked about is at risk.
Can I just say that I'm not using my name? I don't want there to be an actual Clarissa at BYU who gets in trouble.
who gets dragged into the honor code office. So, you know, there's a certain degree of risk. And frankly, you know, I work out in the real world and I take on risk every day. And so do all sorts of people. It is still okay to discriminate against, you know, gays and non-believers in our
society.
Well,
I think they say atheists are one of the most hated groups in America right now. My mother accused me when I would give her reasons as to why I don't believe. And these reasons came from one of two places. Either it was a personal experience, or rather non-experience, or from research that I had done trying to reconcile these things that weren't happening. And the more research I did, the more it just didn't make sense. And as a scientist, you look at all these things and say, well, the only logical conclusion I can draw is that this isn't right. I need a new belief system.
Right.
And unfortunately, every time I try and use these sources and say, well, you know, let's look at the first vision. In the original first vision, he didn't see God and Jesus. He saw an unnamed angel. That's true, right?
Right.
Okay, yeah. Good. I just want to make sure that my sources were right. And so I mentioned that to her. I said, you know, it wasn't until, what, 11 years later when he
Well, the original like one, that. he saw God, but it was in a vision. But then there was another one where he saw an angel and yeah.
But it's not what we know today.
No,
he went to the grove and prayed and saw two.
Different.
Right, and wasn't he 16 in one of them?
He was 17 in one, 13 in another.
Right.
Yeah, it's all over the
place. Or how the Book of Mormon was translated, looking into a hat, not at all like what we see the paintings
that
where
was
he's
shocking
actually
to
sitting.
Me.
I know, right?
Well, I think to validate your point, even today, the most damning research that I ever did to my testimony that I find the most damning to the church was all done while I was a believer, doing legitimate research using faithful or original sources, you know?
That's exactly what I did too. And I tried to explain to my mother. She said, well, where are you getting these sources? I'm like, Mom.
History of the church.
I'm looking at Joseph Smith's journal, Oliver Cowdery, Martin Harris. I'm looking at the Doctrine and Covenants. This stuff doesn't make sense. And she just would not listen when I would explain what my sources were. So, and she tells me this, she calls me at least once a week to tell me, I don't even know what this means. She goes, you can find anything if you look for it.
You're like, yes, you can, Mom.
What does that mean?
Go looking, Mom.
Don't I shouldn't be looking anymore? So in her mind, anything that doesn't support her view of the modern church is anti-Mormon literature.
So she accuses you of wanting it to not be true, and that's why you were looking at places that you shouldn't have been
looking. And I know we've said this before, but for the believers who happen to still be listening, leaving the church is a very difficult, very painful, hard process.
I really wanted to believe.
It's nothing that any of us would wish on anybody, that process.
Which is part of the reason why we're not taking our kids to church.
When you come out the other side, oh, the world is so much more beautiful.
I have to tell you, it still makes me pause when I listen to people. What was it? Something the other day. Oh, yes. I was listening to this girl who was all upset because she's like, well, if I get married to a man in the temple, we get sealed, and then he dies, and then I get married to another man, my children are sealed to the first husband. What are we going to do in the afterlife? And I heard this and I thought,
it breaks your heart, doesn't it?
I don't have to worry about this. This is wonderful. I feel sorry for you, but I don't have to worry about that anymore.
She
shouldn't worry about it either. I mean, like, she's not even married. It's like all conjecture. But
well, no, but trying their minds trying to escape. They're trying to wake up from the matrix. Right.
At least she's thinking about it.
Sense,
at least she's thinking about it.
All right. Well, Clarissa, it's been fun talking to you. We hope things continue. Sounds like it's on the upswing a little bit.
It's on an upswing right now.
And good luck. You'll be walking with your degree soon and then hopefully heading on a big jet airplane.
Yes, that is
also
the plan.
Continue to be walking on eggshells. I mean, that's how we still are.
Oh.
8 years, 9 years.
But it does get better.
After the fact. I don't know. I think that, and then something else will come up with my parents or a sibling or a sibling of yours.
Listen, Debbie Downer, don't you end my podcast on down note.
But I wish I could say it gets better. Still... It gets better for a while, and then there's a little downturn, and then it gets better for a while. That's just how it's going to be for the rest of your life, probably.
But on the other side, you know, our relationships with our families are much weaker. But we have a lot of great friends and a lot of great networks and a lot of other things.
We're much more fulfilled and happier than we were before.
When I get around our families, I'm a little bit sad that there's not a good relationship there. But more than that, I just feel sorry for them. They seem so half alive. And there's more to life than that. So go get on that plane and taste it all.
I hope you can still do your program.
I think so. My father was mentioning to me, so, you know, I'm so excited for you to get this degree. It'll be a great degree for you to have. So
that's good. That sounds.
And he knows that I do need financial help from someone.
Mm-hmm.
And if he was saying that, then hopefully he acknowledges that that's the easiest place to get it.
Right. All right.
All right. Well, thanks again.
Thanks for your voice.
Ah, thanks,
Marissa.
Does the discussion continue for...
The discussion does...
For voices? Yeah, sure, why not? So the discussion continues at our website. Check us out at mormonexpression.com/voices or check out the main website for everything else that's going on in the Mormon Expression world.
Letting go has not been easy, but I don't need you loving me for who you think I should be. Leaps.